Alrighty, let's rock this thing. 3, 2, 1. Good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, March the 27th, 88th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Humboldt County Supervisor, Mr. Lovelace. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Oh, ducky.
Ducky, huh?
Ducky. Yeah.
You don't look like a duck.
No, I just feel like I'm paddling like one right now. But see, notice how smooth I'm doing it. That's what I was trying to get your attention on. Didn't work, huh? This afternoon, we'll get a little bit of an update on the general plan. It continues at a pace. Leave it there. We'll worry about that later. Yep. And also talk a little bit about forest conservation efforts. We certainly have had an awful lot. You know, I think conservation is probably one of those flash words in our area. So we'll talk a little bit about what the definition of that is and some of the things that are going on in the area to help, well, achieve what everybody's goals are. We'll figure out what those goals are when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. But before we do, our quote this afternoon. That one's just too boring. We don't want a boring quote. Well, just say it louder then.
There's a whole page of them there.
Go pay attention to the mark that you left in. Okay, fine.
I'm trying to make you look organized here.
There you go. No chance. Which one do you like? The Einstein one?
Pick one.
Pick one?
Yeah. It's your show.
Yeah, I know, but it's your quote. See, I like the Edward R. Murrow one.
That's a good one.
You like that one?
Yeah.
Can I use it? All right.
It's your book and
Edward,
your show.
Edward R. Murrow. The politician is trained in the art of inexactitude. His words tend to be blunted or rounded because if they have a cutting edge, they may later return to wound him. Oh, my. General plan. I wouldn't think that there's a sharp edge on that one anywhere. It just seems to have been whittled down and worked and refined.
To the point that everyone agrees on it. There's nothing controversial. It's moving.
Well, don't get too carried away.
Through there.
It doesn't seem as if time really is necessarily on the side of conclusion in a lot of things. And I guess... And we talk about the general plan, but I'm thinking of some of the other outreaches that have been attempted. And it seems to me like we get locked up on the burnt Frito chip. Probably haven't heard that analogy before, have you?
I'm dying to hear the
explanation.
Are you
ready? Okay. Yeah. When Frito-Lay does the Frito chips, it goes through, and you know, every once in a while there's the burnt.
The burnt
brown,
one in the bottom of the bag.
And that happens, it's 1/10 of 1/10 of 1/10 percent of the time. But the cost of cutting that in half one more time, the incidence of it, almost doubles the price of a bag of Fritos.
Law of diminishing returns.
Yeah. So it's really not worth perfection because nobody's going to spend $10 for a potato chip bag. Okay, so stepping back and playing that in the public sector, we've had meetings after meetings after meetings, inclusive meetings. Somebody moves new into the neighborhood. We have a new meeting so that they are brought up to speed. And it seems like the decision is put off until we have 95, 96, 97% agreement on something. Instead of saying, you know, Three out of four ain't bad. On this one, we move on to the next one. Three out of four, different players. That ain't bad. And you're happy with a majority, super majority, I think is what it is, if it's a budget related at the state level. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. That's what it is. Nobody will ever be in 100% agreement with every decision that any entity ever makes all the time. Fact. And we move on. Do you sense sometimes, Mark, that we're chasing that burnt Frito chip too often?
Not an analogy I would have used, but okay. But your core issue of what you're saying is very, very true. You know, that we have heard a lot of people over the years talk about the general plan and say that the fact that there is division over the general plan proves that it's flawed and that it's bad, which I just disagree with. The fact that there's division over it is just a testament to the fact that we've got a diverse community.
Or people are reading it.
Yeah, I mean, we've got people with different ideas of what they want for, for Humboldt County's future. And, and that's a good thing. We embrace diversity in all its different forms. And so having folks that have different ideas and are actively involved in wanting to share those ideas, that's a good thing. So just as you're saying, we shouldn't seek to come up with something that is, that everyone likes, because that's not going to happen, nor that everyone, that's non-objectionable to everybody, because, chances are if we get to that point, it's not going to have much meat to it.
So watered down.
And so, we try to come up with the best compromise, the closest thing we can get to a consensus document. And but we shouldn't expect 100% consensus.
When do you know when to cross that line? Okay, we're there. We got enough consensus. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, the simplest measure of that is going to be, when you have a majority of the Planning Commission and then the Board of Supervisors that, approves it and moves it forward. But I don't think that's the measure that any of us want to see. We'd like to see something that we can all agree on. And when the Planning Commission reviewed the general plan, policy by policy by policy, they spent 3 or 4 years working their way through that thing. And they already did the line by line, policy by policy analysis that now we're going back through. And they had broad agreement, complete agreement on the vast majority of policies were unanimously approved by the Planning Commission. But there were plenty of them that were divisive, and where those divisions were primarily differences of values, and you're not going to change someone's values. And the most impassioned argument is unlikely to, bring peace to the Israelis and Palestinians.
Yeah, that's going to be an internal shift of position, not an external.
And so, so you discuss it, you take, on those ones where you can't reach consensus, you state your best argument on each side, and then you put it to a vote, and you move on. And then at the end, when they got through the general plan, they had, again, the vast majority of policies that were unanimously approved by the Planning Commission, a bunch of others that had divided votes, but they unanimously moved the general plan on to the Board of Supervisors. They all accepted that, hey, I got some things I liked out of it, some things I didn't.
We're done. And, it's on to you guys now.
Yeah. And that is, consensus doesn't mean you get consensus on every item within it, but you get consensus that this plan as a whole has, something for everybody in it, and something that everyone probably doesn't like too.
KINS, News and Information Times, 319.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spay or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Mark, there are elements of the general plan, I guess, that's a jargon term now, segments of the general plan that there seems to be no issues with. I know we've talked in the past, but just for those who may have missed those shows, why not adopt element by element and the vast majority that has everybody's feeling comfortable with, put those in, augment them in, and deal with those that are the exceptional or the extraordinary, but get most of this stuff taken care of?
Well, that was essentially what the proposal was from staff and from the Planning Commission when it first came to us, was all the things the Planning Commission had worked through where they got agreement, you know, no reason for us to revisit those issues. We could if we wanted to, if there was something that, hey, you agreed on it, but I think it, you know, that you got the wrong answer on it and I want to bring that back for discussion. We had that option. But the idea was that the Board of Supervisors would focus only on those areas where there was still, you know, significant disagreement at the Planning Commission, where they weren't able to come to something resembling consensus. And so originally that was the proposal, only focus on the areas that, you know, they couldn't agree on. But the board at that time chose instead to revisit everything in the general plan. And so that's what we've been doing since then. We did find one element, the telecommunications element. We were able to move forward with only looking at one policy within it. And that was the only, you know, we only had one policy that actually came up for discussion, and the rest of it was approved in one vote. Ultimately, when we do that, though, the whole general plan itself has to be approved together. So even though we've gone
through... it's a single document?
It's a single document. Each element has to be internally consistent with other elements and other policies. And, of course, it all is subject to a single EIR. And so, you know, that takes a single vote. So it can't be partitioned in that way. But as far as our work, our review of it, we could do that separately.
Now, does that also hold for further amendments down the road, that the whole document has to be redone? Or can you do element by element when it goes through the amendment, or was it, I mean, it's not variables, variances, things of that nature, as the document survives, but it's fine-tuned to current needs?
Well, there's two different pieces of that. One is general plan amendments, which are generally project-specific, someone wanting to do something that's to some degree inconsistent with the general plan, and so they have to get a zoning change or something of that sort. And those do still have to be consistent with the larger view of the general plan, if not specific to, you know, consistent with some of the specifics that they're looking to change. But I think that what you're talking about is periodic updates of the general plan. And that's one of the things that's been discussed, is that rather than taking on this monumental task every 20 years, that perhaps we should take on bits and pieces of it on a more regular basis. And that's one of the things that's been proposed, you know, as part of the process. So
makes more sense to me that way than this big monster.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, you're not serving on that particular board that has to deal with the monster, and then that's okay. When you look at the general plan, is everything being dealt with? Are there things that you see that have higher priorities or that may be not receiving the proper attention in this process?
Well, I think that's one of the things that happens when one of the problems with the process that our board has chosen to use in terms of, you know, revisiting every policy is that if everything is the most important thing, then nothing is more important than anything else. You know, if you've decided that everything is worthy of the same amount of discussion in it, then you're not singling out what are the real key decisions here. What are the real key issues that matter the most to people?
Well, priorities.
Yeah. You know, it's, you can't really prioritize and say, you know, these are the big values-based issues here about, you know, what is our future going to look like in Humboldt County? And those are essentially what the primary issues left to us by the Planning Commission dealt with, the ones that were the most deeply seated in core values and in differing ideas, differing perspectives of what our future should look like. So those are the places that would be the most appropriate to have focused our time on. But by taking up everything equally, I think that it diminishes the ability to prioritize in that way.
Are there new things that have worked their way into this general plan that weren't there early on? You mentioned telecommunications. There certainly are a lot of things on the technology end that didn't exist 20 years ago, 25 mm-hmm. years ago, needs that didn't exist that many years ago. Are those areas adequately designed to handle future changes? Is there flexibility built into this document also, or is it more of a snapshot today mm-hmm. rather than down the road?
Well, to the degree that we can predict the future, we try to. But of course, who knows what's going to happen on these kinds of things. And infrastructure or telecommunications policies that are adequate for today's telecommunications network are probably going to be quickly becoming obsolete as advances happen.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:30. We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace.
Decade of Difference presents a brand new competition, Innovate, a business challenge opportunity to pitch your creative idea. First step, upload a 60 to 90 second elevator pitch highlighting your business venture idea by March 29th. 40 finalists will be selected to move on to phase two. But don't wait. First 100 entries receive a free iTunes gift card. To upload your video and get more information, visit decadeofdifference.org. A grand prize of up to $2,500 will be awarded. Don't wait. Innovate.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Mark, as you consider some of the different things that are out there, whether it's structural or whether it's more philosophical, in dealing with the general plan, are we ready for the future? If we can't predict it, okay, fine. A lot of folks can't. Are we recognizing that it's going to be there and it's going to be different than what we know today?
Well, one of the things that we have to deal with for the future is that if we're going to plan for the future, we have to be able to actually implement the plan. And to implement anything, we got to be able to pay for it. And nowhere is that more important than with infrastructure. And that's been one of the things that we've most recently had some good discussion on, is how do we pay for infrastructure going forward? And
is there a definition of what infrastructure is?
It varies. Infrastructure can mean a lot of different things. But for the general plan, we did choose to recognize the importance of community infrastructure, everything from drainage and wastewater and streetlights and things of this sort. Just all the different kinds of infrastructure we need, plus facilities, library facilities, police facilities, or sheriff's facilities, fire facilities, and the service infrastructure that goes with all of those things. And we know that it takes more infrastructure, more staff, more sheriffs, more firefighters to serve a population of 150,000. Than it takes to serve a population of 120,000. So as we grow, we're going to need more of these things.
When we look at some of the population trends of the last, mm-hmm. I don't know, what, 25, 30 years, flat, this is probably a pretty good term, change, but mm-hmm. flat. If one says there's going to be recognizable significant economic growth and vitality in the area, okay, you got to ramp up in one direction. Mm-hmm. You think, wow, we're going to pretty much stay the same, pretty constant. We may have more retired folks coming in, replacing some of the younger folks that have been hanging out here, waiting for a job. It's not going to happen, so they'll mm-hmm. leave. Okay, same, and you may end up with the same population, but the needs of that population are wildly different. So how do you roll that dice?
It's a very complex issue, like you were saying, that and along with changes in demographics, the fact that we have a greatly increasing senior population, not just in Humboldt County, but around the state and the nation, because people are living longer, that has a lot of changes to the type of communities that we need to be building and the type of infrastructure that we need to provide, the type of services that we need. But we also have had significant changes in the last 30 years and more about our tax base. And what used to be, you know, we used to rely much more just on property tax to fund things. And that got greatly reduced. The ability to rely on that got reduced through Proposition 13. And, you know, that has greatly diminished our ability to rely upon that for being able to build infrastructure. And so more and more.
Well, the state pulled their switch or change thing, too.
Which one? Which switch or change? Yeah, no kidding. Been enough of those?
yeah. When sales tax wasn't the panacea.
Yeah.
What was that called?
The triple flip? Is that what you're thinking of?
So yeah.
Realignment?
Boy,
back in, there's been
15 years ago.
Yeah, the VLF. There's so many different pieces of it, and there've been changes again and again. But what it comes down to is that the ability to just have this one big pot of money from property tax that we can dip into for all of the needs of the community and of society isn't there anymore. And the state has really moved towards a beneficiary pays model, and what that's called is fees. The difference between a fee and a tax is a tax is,
one can be spent raised on everybody quicker than the other.
Well, there's that. But the reason that that can be done is because a fee, the only person that pays a fee is the person that's going to actually benefit from that fee.
Like a user fee.
Yeah, a user fee. Exactly. So that's why when we talk about things like developer impact fees, which was one of the big discussions that we had. We're talking only about something of new development paying its proportional fair share for new services or new infrastructure that are necessitated by that development. So we're not talking about new development paying anyone else's share or paying for paying into the general fund for us to spend at will doing whatever. We're talking only about recognizing that if we, again, have that figure of saying, we're going to grow by 20,000 people, whatever that is, and here's all the different services that we imagine are going to increase by X percent to cover that, and here's how much it's going to cost. And this is the most simplistic explanation of it possible, but that if you apportion that out over the landscape, you say everyone's going to pay their fair share as development happens. But if we don't have that, then where is the money going to come from to pay for those new services, the new facilities that are necessitated, all of those things? If they're not being paid for by the new development that benefits from it, then it is being paid for by the taxpayers generally. And so that's really the question is, should new development pay its fair share, or should the rest of the taxpayers pay for them?
And I suppose that would be for new stuff. Now, if it's a replacement infrastructure, say sewer lines, okay, everybody's benefiting from that. Everybody should be pitching in on that. But I would guess that that's probably where you get your biggest blowback is, now, wait a minute, this is because these new people are in and the capacity is, it's all their fault.
But again, it doesn't pay.
So you're not tapped in and you're not getting any benefit from this and you've been skating on the people 50 years ago that paid for the pipes that are being now antiquated and have to be replaced.
And where the difficulty comes in is that when we, again, when we start talking about new development paying its fair share for impacts, it's not talking about, it covering what hasn't been paid into in the past. It's just their share going forward. But if we start doing that now and we have a part of the community that will also benefit from new infrastructure that has not been paying into it and isn't paying into it, then we're still, for one, we now have new development having to pay something that the old development isn't having to pay or hasn't had to pay. And we also aren't recovering the overall fair share. So, we have to have a variety of different tools along with things like developer impact fees, which may or may not be an appropriate thing, and they can be applied in a lot of different ways. There's no standard model for them, but there's also, as part of the tools we look at, there's assessments, there's things such as Mellow Roost community financing districts, and a lot of other types of
tools
like that, and trying to find how we can appropriately apply these so that we actually have funding to build the infrastructure that we need going forward. It's going to be an important part of planning for our future.
KINS, News and Information Time, 3:43. We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:46. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Mark, in the last segment, you were talking about developer fees, and I flashed a thought, and I don't know if I've heard this one talked about before, that pick a day, you know, but a date certain. Okay, if we were to replace the water system, or not replace, if it was brand new, if we were going to replace the infrastructure of whatever, streets, sidewalks, mm-hmm. whatever it might happen to be, here's what the cost is. Chunk. Here's what it is over the 40-year lifespan. Mm-hmm. Chunk. Divide it out over everybody who was there at that point. Whatever that number is, then is used with a CPI for future development for the next 10 years. And then you reassess, and I would think that the folks who are in the community would raise Cain about that. But putting it on the new development or shifting a larger burden mm-hmm. there, okay, you're financing it for 30 years, but that price of a house, instead of being something that might be affordable at $300,000, bumps to 375 or 425, mm-hmm. house doesn't get sold, development doesn't happen. Now we have other unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. Is that something that is ever looked at, or does that just not make sense?
Well, that is a big concern, and that's one of the concerns we've heard, is that, you know, when you put these costs on new development, that it's going to make that new development cost more, and the home buyer is ultimately going to pay for that. And so there is an impact there. But we also have to recognize that if we're still providing the service, if we're still going to have, you know, more sheriff's deputies to serve a larger population than we would for a smaller one, if we're going to have more sheriff's substations when we have a community like McKinleyville build up to the level that it has, or, you know, new fire stations to serve, you know, as population moves, all of these kinds of things, if we actually provide that service, then the fact that we're not charging that, you know, charging those development fees doesn't mean that the money goes away. It just means someone else is picking up the tab. And realistically, if the beneficiary isn't paying for it, then the taxpayers generally are paying for it.
So if we're in a growth mode, mm-hmm. obviously it's easy to afford because you got more people paying in and mm-hmm. you got the spread, and that's where it comes from. Mm-hmm. If you have a static population base like what we have experienced in a number of the communities, that's a whole different ballgame. Can you have two different solutions to the same answer one jurisdiction?
That goes back to why we have to have a variety of tools. We know that infrastructure is going to have costs even if we're not building out for more, because it has a limited lifespan. And had we had some of these tools in place 30 years ago, 40 years ago, we'd be doing much better in being able to update that infrastructure, and we'd be less dependent upon state and federal grants, which again are going to the taxpayers generally to pay for this infrastructure.
Hindsight's always wonderful, isn't it? I would think there's got to be a better way to do it. There's got to be an easier way to do it, and I don't know if general plan updates or the triggering mechanisms to keep that in, mm-hmm. in people's minds, special districts, la, 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 and there's lots of things that are out there. I think bottom line is a lot of people don't want to pay for it.
Well, I don't think anyone wants to pay for something if they don't have to. You know, that's generally most people operate that way.
The human condition.
Yeah.
That's the problem. That's what we have to get in the general plan. Thanks for coming by. We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.